Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he's over there in that other box. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Feeling very much like an asshole today.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Have you ever, like, annoyed your spouse on purpose?
Yes.
So, just now, I annoyed the fiancé with a very simple, basic thing, but I knew it would get under his skin.
Okay.
So I had some lunch. It was just a reheated like little pasta with some meat sauce and cheese. Sure. But I ate it out of the saucepan. And I knew he'd have a little comment. He's like, oh, okay.
I didn't know we were savages.
Right. But I was like, I did it on purpose.
I like to I like to take things that my wife uses every day and put them in different spots around the house. And then when she goes, why is this over here? I go, you put it there. Like, why would I touch your thing? Like, that's your thing. Why would I bother with that?
Evil.
Yeah, that's what
that's
I like.
Evil.
I like to make her think she's crazy. And then later I go, no, it was me. It was me. With us this week is Felix Klein, the co-founder of Radical Fish Games and programmer, artist, and game designer of CrossCode, a retro-inspired 2D action RPG that has just recently made its way to consoles. Felix, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you do to just annoy people for no reason?
I usually don't annoy people. Like, I'm like usually the person who tends to be a bit too serious. But I don't know.
You'll fit in.
Like, I tend to ignore people, but it's never on purpose. It's mostly because I'm just in thoughts too much, and then people just talk to me, and then I say, and then, sorry, I didn't listen. Please repeat. But, you know, that's just how my mind works sometimes.
This might be the best podcast for you or the worst podcast for you.
Yeah, usually I do well in podcasts and stuff like this because I'm focused on the actual thing. But sometimes when I'm, like, doing some work like programming and drawing and things, and people just suddenly ask me things, they usually have to ask two times for me to actually listen.
Well, hopefully people are listening to this show two times. And what is this show? It's the Dual Screens Podcast. This is an interview show where we bring on an industry guest to tell us their story and discuss their latest project. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a designer, a voice actor, they all have a story to tell, and we want to be their platform to do so. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com, and of course, on Apple, on Google, on iHeartRadio, on Spotify. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. It will help the show out tremendously, and we will read your reviews right here on the show. And of course, you could also watch the show on youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so by going to patreon.com/ndspodcast, just like our Patreon producers, Colton the Apprentice Nestler and FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. And with that support, we could do this show, and we could get these guests, and we could bring this directly to your ears, which is so exciting to us. So let's get right into said show, and let's get right into, Felix, your career, and everything about CrossCode and Radical Fish and all that fun stuff. Now, Andy, I know this game resonated pretty damn hard with you, so why don't you kick off our beautiful interview?
Right. I mean, off the bat, it just hits all the major points. It's a action RPG in the vein of, like, Secret of Mana, you know, Link to the Past, Alundra, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's got some of the most exquisite sprite work you'll ever see in a video game. Mm-hmm. I think the jumping off point is that you come all the way from Germany, Felix. What is that indie game scene like for you guys out there? Just out of curiosity, because I feel it's like it's very robust in spots like Canada and the UK and over here in the West Coast. But what's that scene like in Germany in terms of that indie game scene?
Well, we certainly do have a game development scene or an indie development scene. I don't know. It's like game development in general is a little bit troublesome in Germany. Like, you do not really have a lot of big game developers in Germany in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why there might not be the biggest indie scene as well. But you know, there is a lot of people who work on projects. There has also been a lot of more recent crowdfunded indie game projects from Germany, like Monster Sanctuary, if you know that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I backed that one. Yeah, it's like a City of the Night slash Pokemon kind of game.
Yeah, it's also from Germany. It's actually from a guy that we knew back from where we came from. I mean, most of our team actually worked with RPG Maker, and the funny thing is RPG Maker used to be surprisingly big in Germany. There was like a very robust community. In fact, I think there were like three communities, like three different forums, each of them doing stuff with RPG Maker. And most of our team actually comes from that area. So that we started with RPG Maker, but obviously we went to different things later on. But yeah.
So why don't you think there's a major game development community in Germany? What do you think is holding it back?
It's very hard to say. I think there's a little bit of like a culture clash in Germany, in that, like, Germans have the reputation to be serious and not understand jokes. It's not entirely like that. Obviously, we do have humor, but if you go, for instance, we do. Yes, please believe me. The thing is, all the jokes we cross could have been written by Germans. Just going to say that.
Right, and the game is actually really funny. So I was going to say, have a sense of humor.
Yes, I was just going to say that,
But the thing is, still, sometimes that's more like my own opinion. I'm not really sure if that's true, but Germany has, they tend to be a bit too serious about some things. And one way you see that is there is, like, very little... there's no comic culture in Germany. Like, you have a lot of comics coming from the United States, obviously. Right. You do have a lot of them in France, for instance, as well. Whenever you go from Germany to France over the border, you suddenly see there's like cartoons and small comic figures all over the place sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go to a souvenir store, there's a lot of stuff like that. You don't have that in Germany. Germans don't do this a lot. There is a few known comic figures in Germany, but there's not too many really, especially recently. And I think, like, for a lot of Germans, it's more like games are like childish stuff, or maybe you can say the same thing about entertainment in general. Like, entertainment is not as appreciated in German culture to some extent. At least that's the impression I sometimes get. So whenever you talk about games in Germany, it's not just about doing great games. It's like, what can games contribute to the culture or to the economy? Like, maybe like games can like help to develop new technologies because they tend to drive technologies. So that's great. That's why we should support games, but not just because it's always games are more than entertainment, because apparently entertainment isn't good enough for Germany. So I think that might be one reason, but as I said before, I'm more or less speculating here. The people say there's not a lot of there are not enough investors in Germany ready to invest into games, so it's hard to get money for game development in general. So that's why we also pretty much had to rely on crowdfunding and like more international sources of money to actually start working on CrossCode.
Have you not shown them the fact that video games are the number one entertainment medium across the entire planet? Like, is that not enough for, like, I feel like if you, like, just talking dollars and cents, like, if an investor just wants to make money, like, just showing them the page saying, hey, games are number one. They're over TV, they're over music, they're over movies, they're over any other form of art. They are number one way of making money. Like, I feel like that would be like an easy sell for somebody looking to make money, especially where there's very little national competition.
I mean, you're right. And I think slowly Germany starts to get this as well, because they actually now start to really support game development. There's a grant now where you can apply to essentially get money to work on your games, and we applied for that too for our next game project. So it's like it's slowly changing, but really Germany is really lagging behind in that regard. So there was very little support of the game development industry, and that's also part of the reason why not much happened here in that regard, I think.
How did you guys get Radical Fish Games off the ground in that type of, what I don't want to say hostile environment, it's not necessarily hostile, but in that apathetic environment? How did you get Radical Fish Games off the ground?
I mean, the our studio essentially evolved around CrossCode, and CrossCode was essentially a hobby project that escalated. So, I mean, in the beginning, it was just we wanted to make a small HTML5 game. That's actually pretty much how it started. And then we worked for 3 years on a demo version, and then we just decided, yeah, let's try do crowdfunding, and then that actually worked. And then soon after that, we started developing an early access game. So, I mean, we moved to early access, and that's essentially how we got our money, how we could finance the development for another 3 years. Hmm. So it actually took us a very long time to finish this game, but it was pretty much thanks to crowdfunding and early access. That's what made CrossCode possible.
Yeah, and this is like a near decades-long journey for your team. It's between when the first demos were made through early access, crowdfunding, and now with your recent console release. It's like upwards of, I think, almost 10 years that this game has been in the works and has been in the public spotlight.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like 2018 was when we released the full version. Now, almost 2 years later, we finally have the console version. And yeah, pretty much 10 years, like, to get everything done. Like, if we manage to get the DLC finished, to be fair, we still have next year. And if we manage to finish the DLC next year still, before the next year, September, everything is finished in 10 years.
So is there a 10-year deadline for all of these games to be finished once and for all?
To be fair, your internal goal? I hope we will finish the DLC before that. But I always said, hopefully this year, though, I have to be honest, it might be moved to early next year for several reasons. But yeah, I can talk about this more later.
Yeah. So for the uninitiated and the unlearned out there, what is CrossCode?
CrossCode is an action RPG, which is also partly an action adventure, like a Zelda game, because you do have character building, you do have equipment and stats and all that complexity, you know, from RPGs, also quests and all that. But there's also puzzles, like a lot of puzzles. Some people claim it's actually a puzzle game. I'm not sure I would agree. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of puzzles in the game. They're like, there's dungeons with puzzles, like in Zelda. Most of the battles also include some kind of puzzle solving, because it's not just a hack and slash kind of game, but you actually have to do certain things to damage your enemies effectively, stuff like that. And then we have this weird setting about having a game inside the game. So it's actually kind of like .hack or Sword Art Online. Essentially, you do play one player in an MMO. It's actually an offline game, but the setting is that of an MMO. So that's kind of CrossCode in a nutshell.
You do a lot of really interesting things with breaking the fourth wall with some of the characters and really driving that home without really taking the player out of the experience. You do a really good job with that. Can you explain how you got to that decision? What were the challenges you had in kind of exploring that fourth wall breaking aspect of the game?
Well, to be that's the surprising thing is that the MMO really just happened because we decided for this mix of gameplay. We wanted to have this core mechanic of throwing bolts that just bounce on walls, and then a lot of puzzle solving. That's essentially how the idea started. It was first just about the gameplay. And then we wanted to turn this into an RPG, and we needed some kind of story. And then we just thought, what kind of setting allows us to just add puzzles everywhere that don't necessarily make sense? And we didn't find any good answer for that, so we just decided to make a game inside a game. So we just essentially pushed the explanation for those puzzles into the game inside the game. So that's all just because it's a game, and this game really doesn't explain it, but we have some kind of explanation for those puzzles. So that was kind of like the idea. And everything else, like having the mute protagonist and all this false wall breaking stuff, that really just happened as a consequence out of that. So we just thought about how can we make an interesting story inside an MMO, and then we just got this idea about Lair and everything else.
See, I love this because it both simulates being an MMO and at the same time makes fun of the entire genre. Like you have, like with the quest and how it handles things, it's like that is very intentional with what they're doing here.
Yeah.
What quest in particular? No.
Just overall structure, like how, like the MMO tropes that you find.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the game finds ways, it has them, like they're in there, but since you're in this game world, it's very intentional how it kind of pokes, it pokes fun at it at the same time.
Yeah, it was actually the very first version of CrossCode that got out didn't include quests, but very early, during early access, we decided we will try to implement quests because we thought, well, it's an MMO, there should be quests, it would just fit in there. And the funny thing is then we just we got a nice quest system and we thought, yeah, we have quests. And then we just implemented some very, very basic quests because we thought, hey, we have a quest system. Look, you can now beat up enemies and you can collect stuff and you can turn it in for a reward. And then we just had these very generic quests. And we thought, okay, that's cool. And then people started complaining about very generic quests. And we thought, yeah, well, like we were just so much focused on just having quests in general that we didn't really pay too much attention on designing very interesting quests, at least in the very beginning. And then we actually, in fact, we did remove a few quests. In the very early versions of the game actually had some kind of quest board, like what you have in Xenoblade X, where you just get very generic quests about killing some enemies and gathering some loot. And we decided to remove those very generic quests because we decided, yeah, in fact, a lot of people don't like them and they feel like filler content. And let's just focus on more like special quests with some kind of storyline and some interesting gameplay stuff.
And that's how a game goes to become a 10-year video game, when you add this little thing and it has this, you're just like, oh yeah, let's do that because that sounds like fun. And then all of a sudden that has consequences. And then all of a sudden you're rewriting that whole part of the game. And it's like, yeah, I mean, one of the cool things about the whole side quest situation is that, yes, in the context of the MMO, they are very MMO like quests, but the rewards aren't necessarily make or break the game. It's, you know, it's just for extra cash. It's for a couple of extra pieces of equipment. It's, you know, it's for awards that you can get throughout playing the game, but it'll help you flesh out your character in a way, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, I mean that they just give people ways to spend time next to the main plot. I mean, it's part of the reason why the game is so long. And I mean, it's a common critique that the quests are not very inspiring in CrossCode. I'm not sure I would agree with this personally. I think people look too much about stuff like the plot structure and how it's usually you go to a faction and the faction gives you a certain task and then you do that task and you go back, you get a reward. So it's usually structured like that. So there's not a lot of quest chains, not a lot of huge plot twists. But then again, we do have stuff like platforming side quests, which are just about jumping over things, like the monk quests, which are more or less hated because they're very difficult. Then we do have a freaking tower defense mini game inside a side quest, and a lot of crazy stuff like this. Where there's a lot of unique boss fights just for quests, and a lot of them have unique mechanics too. We usually take puzzle mechanics and kind of like not just reuse them, but mix them in a new way. So there's actually entirely new puzzles that you find in quests. So I would not just argue they're just easy filler content. I guess we just focus too much on the gameplay aspects, and some people just expect to have like very interesting stories in their quests.
Well, yeah, I mean the side quests in CrossCode are kind of designed for you to become experts at the mechanics that you've already taught. It's a way to like continuously flesh out your skill set, as not the character skill set, but the player's skill set, because you're taking what we've learned and then you're remixing it and making us kind of adjust to the gameplay. And then all of a sudden when we do get into the later portions of the main story quest, where we are as players are a little bit better at playing the game. So I appreciated that, the way you guys handled side quests, for sure.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, yeah, we did spend a lot of time on those quests overall, I think, because I mean they're part of the reason why the game has this long playtime, I think.
What was it like to actually write down, like to create those characters? Because I feel like when you're trying to simulate an MMO, the idea is it's you're with actual living people you're playing the game with. And in this game, you you kind of get that sense because everyone is just so well written and true to life that it seems like, wow, these could actually be real people. So what was that like for you guys to create these characters?
I'm very happy always to hear that when people like the characters, because it's like it's great for me to know that I managed to, like, I actually did most of the character writing.
Well, there you go.
New characters, actually. So I'm very happy to hear this, that people like that. I don't know. It's a bit difficult for me to exactly explain how I, at least from my case, how I come up with those characters and how they talk. There's like certain things I usually pay attention to, and that's that I always try to really try to see things from every character's perspective and really try to avoid situations where I feel like the character doesn't act like the character should act in this situation. And that usually comes up for, like, if there's a misunderstanding, like I usually hate this when you have any kind of story and characters, a misunderstanding that you could very easily solve if a character would just, I don't know, ask about this.
It's like every sitcom premise in the 80s and 90s. Like Three's Company was just, every plot was around a simple misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's all it was, yep.
Yeah, and I hate this personally with a passion. So I always try to kind of like make sure this doesn't happen too much in CrossCode, at least. There is actually some kind of plot issue with miscommunication, but it actually makes sense logically, because in that case Leah simply couldn't explain it because she can't talk. So that was our excuse here, but at least it did make sense. And even then I made sure that this conflict is resolved later, because I thought if we keep it for too long it would be pretty much annoying. So that's like one of these things I try to make sure, like, avoid these jarring conflicts where you would think, man, why do we have this issue? I mean, it could be very easily solved in practice, and I try to avoid this. There's also stuff like this general idea that you need to have respect for every character out there. And one example I like to bring up is actually Buggy, because he's like this one guild character who always makes jokes, and he seems a little bit one-dimensional in that he always does jokes all the time. But there is actually like a hidden, it's actually not, you might be able to miss this in the game, but if you like send messages to your, like you contact all your guild members by dealing all the time, there is like one situation where Buggy does a joke and actually starts to hurt Leah's feeling a bit at this moment. And in that moment, he actually noticed that and actually takes it back and actually even apologizes to Leah in that situation. So just to kind of like show that even though he does always do his jokes, he's not like an entirely flat character, and he's still a human being to some extent, at least.
That's what makes
I always felt like...
Go ahead, Andy.
No, he's just trying to cover up for some deep, deep, dark issues with humor. That's what I do anyway.
I mean, if you just look at, like, you know, us as human beings, like when we're on the internet, when we're doing something like, you know, where people don't see what's behind the curtain, it's a Wizard of Oz type thing, you know, like we're only showing people what we want them to see. And it was like a conversation I had with one of the people in my streams at twitch.tv/batchild asked me, am I like this in real life? Am I who I am on stream in real life? Am I that animated? Am I that loud and boisterous and quick on my feet and all this stuff? And I'm kind of like, well, yeah, yes and no, because in real life, you know, there are things around me that might influence who I am to other people. But when I'm on camera and all that stuff and I'm playing this part, I turn my personality up to 11. And sometimes that can bring you somewhere, you know, to where you do insult somebody, you do hurt somebody's feelings, because you're not aware, you're not socially aware of what's going on around you. And like, that's what makes these characters feel so human, especially when they do break the fourth wall and they do kind of, they show you who they are behind their avatars, behind their characters, is like, oh no, they this person has stuff going on in their real life, and you kind of get little teeny tiny glimpses of it. And I think that kind of goes a long way to really nailing down the fourth dimension, or making these characters four-dimensional, as opposed to just kind of like these flat 2D avatars that you interact with just to get plot points.
Yeah, pretty much. Though that's also like the thing that there's a lot of other like this anime, for instance, like on video games like .hack and Sword Art Online, they do have the same setting. And I have to admit, I don't know. I actually never watched Sword Art Online, I have to say this here. I did play .hack and I did watch Lock Horizon. And what I usually fear when I watch anime and games with this setting is that usually players just take things too serious. You like, in the end, they are, it feels more like they're actually part of this fantasy setting, and they're really role-playing to be really in this world. And it feels kind of like unnatural because, you know, it's an MMO and people are just here to have fun, and people usually make nonsense. They are not that serious about this. There's always people just talking about out of context things in a game and making jokes. And so that's what was one going cross code. Like, it's an MMO and it should feel like MMO. That means people are not always serious, and sometimes they're just talking about whatever. And that's why you do have a character like Emily, who is actually never really all that much role-playing at all. She kind of like, she always, if you pay attention, she's usually saying things by the wrong name. So she doesn't say about like those are the ancients, no, those are the space birds. And and like, also she just plays the game and talks about real life all the time. Mm-hmm. And but she just still enjoys it. She's just not role playing. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you have characters like Apollo, who is like doing the exact opposite, who is really a lot about role-playing things, and to an extent where it feels almost unnatural. But that's essentially something that we use to also make characters a little bit more unique, kind of like how exactly they interact with the game and everything.
Yeah, the thing is, we all have friends like that. There's always one who just wants to play a game and just have a good time with their friends online that doesn't know like the lore or like the terminology. But then there's one that's just hyper-focused into it, that's like they're living in the game itself. Like, I've been a part of some World of Warcraft stuff, and some of those guys are just hardcore. Like, they're living, like, their avatar is what they really are, and their real-life self is the fantasy, is the illusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been part of MMOs where you have specific servers that like they label themselves as the role playing server,
right?
You know, like where you go in there, you're role playing. That's it. End of story. That mm-hmm. like you are your character. If you talk out of character, you have to write OOC out of character and say, okay, what the fuck? What are we talking about? Like I'm lost. You know, I've been a part of that before, and you know, it's it's definitely rewarding. It has its rewards, but like people aren't Myers-Briggs, you know, like they're not boiled down to one type of personality. Like everybody has different things that make them react differently in a myriad of situations. Like, sure, you can say you look at the Ninja Turtles, right? The Ninja Turtles are Myers-Briggs breakdown. It's, you know, A, B, C, and D, and they fit into these columns perfectly. But you know, people that are playing these characters online, they may be portraying a specific type, archetype of a character, but, you know, whatever's happening in their personal life might affect them, you know, in different ways. It just, like I was saying before, it just adds like this realistic dimension to it. And really, it's something that when you're playing CrossCode, you don't necessarily think like, oh, you know what this game needs? This game needs like real life, you know, problems from people behind the curtains or this fourth wall breaking. But like, it really does add this dimension to it, where even as a player, you start to realize, oh, there's more to this than just this, you know, dodging and shooting and you know, living this in this virtual world. Like, there's other things going on outside of this world that they don't necessarily have these like major consequences, but they do add a flavor to what you're doing, almost like a unintentional carrot at the end of the stick kind of thing. So I appreciate it for what it was, what you were trying to do, for sure. Can you talk a little bit about why, of all of the choices you could have made, of all the little ping pong balls with plot devices, why did you choose Amnesia? Everyone goes with Amnesia.
Well, it just fit in that.
Dude, it actually does make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, I know it's like very old. But
and it's like a trope. It's like you have it there for a reason. And it makes sense with what's going on.
So the whole thing, as far as what I understand, and I could, I hope I'm getting this right. The main character has amnesia and was basically uploaded into this virtual world to kind of figure out, essentially get either get memories back or just become human again or whatever. But and that also explains the silent protagonist situation as well, where it's kind of just uploading consciousness to become this avatar and then kind of learning through the characters around it, around her avatar. Is that like basically your basic no frills setup? Would that be accurate?
There's actually more to it, but that would be like a huge spoiler. So I'm not sure how much.
That's not spoil things, but like, that's like, if you were like to handing the controller to somebody and saying, you know, and maybe you skipped the beginning of the game, but you're just giving them a demo, like, that would be an apropos setup for something.
I would just tell them that Leia, for some reason, is stuck in this game, and she can't speak, and you actually don't know exactly why she is in the game, but that's something you will figure out as you play the game. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a lot about the mystery, what exactly is happening to Leia, and what Sergei is all about, and... So there is later in the game, there is like a lot of things explained, and I still think the amnesia is essentially like it's very integrated into the plot. There's actually we really use the amnesia to explain a lot of things on why the plot works, it like evolves the way it does, and you know, like it wouldn't have worked without amnesia, this whole thing. And yeah, I know it's old, but it's also very effective because it's like it makes very interesting storytelling, because you start to remember things in the past, and it's like you have this way of starting things and having this aura of mystery that you can solve as time goes on. So there's a reason why so many people use it, I think.
Right. I think it's also how you use the mechanic. Mm-hmm. Because again, when you have like, you have the mute character trope, but in this instance, it's her sound isn't working, or her mic isn't functioning, so she can't speak to the game world. So that, off the bat, you're elevating the idea of what a mute character is. Mm-hmm. Like, a Link just doesn't speak, because I mean, he speaks to characters, but we don't get to hear what he's saying in the game world. Mm-hmm. To us, he's a mute character, but in this setup, Leia has a very good reason for not speaking to the other characters. And it makes sense in the world building, sort of a sense.
And she's literally mute, and that you recognize this because other characters notice she can't speak. And that's also why, yes, she's the mute protagonist, but she's like literally mute, and that makes it different and unique, actually.
So I want to talk about getting this game to consoles, because it was out for a while on Steam, and now it's made its way finally. I bought it a second time for the Switch because I had to. I know there were some challenges for your team to get it specifically to the Switch, because it was JavaScript, HTML5. What were those hurdles like for you guys, and how did you eventually overcome them?
I can't really talk too much about the porting process because we didn't do it. Our publisher, they actually did the port for us, but I do know about the process, so I can talk a bit about it.
Please
so,
do.
Like, the thing is, JavaScript is not really designed for games. Strictly speaking, they really try to make JavaScript compatible with games. That's why you do have a lot of new APIs like the Gamepad API and Web Audio, because at some point they just decided, hey, we could just create games with JavaScript and HTML5. It should work, and it does work well on PC. I mean, for the most part, the game runs well for most of our players on PC, not even on low-end hardware at times. Like, it just has to be modern hardware. It doesn't have to be the high mode. I mean, it's a pixel art game, so. But consoles are a different story let's just say you cannot optimize JavaScript the same way on consoles as you can on PC, and that's mostly because of restrictions that you have when you apply your code on consoles. You cannot do certain things that you can do on PC, and that's mostly because of security concerns, because consoles don't want you to be able to do certain things, because otherwise players might misuse this to kind of like preach some security constraints and stuff like that. So in practice, that means you just cannot interpret JavaScript on consoles. You do have to convert it to another language. You cannot, and you're like, there's a lot of stuff that PCs, like modern browsers, do to really make JavaScript fast, and all of these things you cannot really do on consoles. And even if you would do them, it might not even be fast then, still not fast enough. So what Deck 13 essentially did is they did a lot of R&D. That's part of the reason why it took so long. They, in the beginning, they actually had the plan of just interpreting JavaScript, and that didn't work, and they tried something else, and that also didn't work. But then I found a solution. Essentially, they just compile the JavaScript to another language, C++ in particular, because that one just is okay with all platforms. And that was really difficult to do, and also part of the reason why the game still up to this point has weird issues, because JavaScript has no types. Like, you do declare variables and you store values in it, but the value doesn't have to need to have consistent types. It can be a number, it can be a string, it can be like a really complicated object. Doesn't matter. JavaScript just takes everything and it just compiles things on the fly as it realizes that the types are always the same. In C++, all the types have to be known and everything has to be optimized ahead of time for those types. And if you don't neither know the type, you have to use very inefficient code to make it work. So what you have to do is you have to annotate the types, hope that it really is always that type, and then you just need to optimize. And that's why it took so long. They just had to go through the code, just go to the different parts and just annotate the types, run the compiler again, see if it still works, and hope. And then usually it works faster. And then you just do it with all the parts which are really problematic in terms of performance until it was fast enough. And that really took some time.
It sounds like you essentially had to rewrite the whole game. Like
not exactly, because annotating types is not the same as rewriting the code, fortunately. I mean, that's why I think it's a good approach, because that's also why they actually can take an update from our code base, which they have to do if they want to release a DLC later on. And they just have to add more types for the parts that have changed or have been added. So it's not exactly like rewriting the code, because that's what a lot of people do in that case. They just rewrite the whole code base. I actually believe that having the compiler was a very good approach for CrossCode, because CrossCode has a really, really big code base. And since we are still working on the code base, just rewriting the whole code from scratch would have been not that feasible.
Well, that's... And go ahead, Andy.
And also now with the DLC, it allows you to work with your existing code and just have Deck 13, I would imagine, annotate for the Switch or console releases down the line. Is that correct?
Yes, pretty much. So they actually have access to our repository. And if we update, if we are done, actually they will do this now soon for the current version, because right now the console version does not include New Game Plus. So once they have finally those patches released with all the fixes that everybody's waiting for, then they will start working on updating the whole game to include New Game Plus, and we'll just take the current up-to-date PC version, just update the code base, annotate more types if there's any issues, have to do a lot of testing, and then you will get the version for consoles as well. That's also why it takes always will take some time for the console version to get the version that you have on PC.
Now, listener, now I know you're listening, and viewer, and I know you're watching. When you bitch and complain on the internet about something taking so long, I want you to rewind the last 6 minutes of this podcast, and I want you to listen to it again. And if you can't make sense of it in your tiny brain, then shut your fucking mouth. Stop tweeting at developers. This shit takes a while because it's fucking complicated.
I should add to this. Honestly.
Oh, it gets worse.
It gets worse because, I mean, you may have heard this before, but the thing is, just updating anything on a console, period, takes long.
Right, because you have to certify and all that shit, right?
You have to certify the patches, and that's really the issue right now, because all these issues that have come up in the first 2 or 3 days have been fixed very, very quickly. And like, we found most of the issues like within 3 or 4 days, and everything is ready and the patch has been submitted. And now we're just waiting. And we're waiting and we are answering the same bug reports over and over and over again. I mean, people, obviously, what else should they know? I mean, they they wouldn't know if this was fixed or not. So obviously they sent us the report. So there's nothing we can do about it, but right. still.
And things that used to take 2 weeks are now taking 6 weeks because of COVID and everybody working from home and you know,
that makes it even worse.
Yeah. It's a nightmare. And you're not the only dev who has said it before. So people out there that are listening that don't understand how this thing works, if you still don't understand, because I'm going to be honest with you, I listened and I watched as this was explained to me, and I still don't fucking get it. But I know enough now that I'm not going to complain about something not getting updated quick enough.
Steven, you should take that confusion and make it into rage and put it on the internet for everyone to enjoy.
I think I should. Let me tweet it now. at crosscode.
No. WTF.
WTF. Why are you no fix? Angry emoji.
I do want to get into Game Pass a little bit, because this game did premiere on Game Pass when it launched on console. And as a consumer, I feel that is the best deal on the market when it comes to gaming. Game Pass seems like the ultimate no-brainer to me. It's $15 a month. And you get so much content. But as an interviewer in this scenario, I have even more interest, because I want to know what that works like behind the scenes for you guys and Microsoft. What is that conversation like? What is the sales pitch like on their end to get you to join? God damn it. To join their platform.
I wish I could tell you more about this, but unfortunately I can't, because this pretty much went over our publisher. Deck 13, essentially, they did have the contact. And honestly, I'm thankful for them to have this contact, because it's a pretty good deal for us. I mean, I probably should not tell you any numbers, but essentially Microsoft makes you an offer. They pay you like a pretty good sum ahead of time, which is guaranteed, and then you just add the game to the Game Pass. And the number was high enough for us and our publisher, so we thought, yeah, we will do that. So, and they did the same for PC already. Actually, CrossCode was one of the first games that released for Game Pass for PC. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people are playing the game on Game Pass on PC, which might be because not too many people play on the Windows Store on PC. I'm not sure. But there's definitely a lot of people playing over Game Pass on Xbox. We're actually pretty surprised how many people play that way. So essentially, Microsoft also get something for the money this time.
So that's actually a good segue to my next question. I know you can't talk about dollars and cents numbers, but what about numbers, say, Game Pass downloads versus console sales on the PS4 and the Switch? Do you have those sort of metrics, or what those look like for you guys?
I think I can at least say that right at this moment, there's more people playing on Game Pass than Switch and PS4 combined.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That is something I didn't see coming. But yeah, that's how it is right now.
Yeah. And I think that the whole PC versus, Xbox Game Pass thing, I mean, it could simply be boiled down to the fact that you can get a $250 Xbox or, a $1,000 PC, or like not everybody has a PC that can run these types of things, So even though it doesn't necessarily come across as a very demanding game, just if you don't have a gaming PC, you don't think to game on your PC, especially when you have much cheaper options to plug into your TV, So, I mean, that could definitely be one of the reasons. But, that's great for you guys. Like, I'm thrilled for you guys that you were able to get that deal. But, so when your publisher comes to you, are they just like, hey, knock knock knock, guess what, like we you're going to be on Game Pass? Or was it like did they have to I guess what I want to ask is, like, the publisher creator relationship, do you have any sort of input as to where it goes, or negotiation power, or is that you kind of leave that all up to the publisher at that point?
That is always specified in the contract, pretty much. And I think in our case, they do have to, especially when it's about stuff like putting the game in a bundle and things like this. But I think also for deals like the one with Microsoft, they do have to contact us and talk to us about this. But I have to say, one thing I'm very happy about is that our publisher is very like very transparent and very easy to reach, and they actually talk to us all the time about stuff that's going on.
That's awesome.
So the communication is going very well, and then maybe because they're also from Germany, so we're in the same time zone and we do speak the same language, that helps. And yeah, it's like in that regard we really didn't have any issues so far. We did have small issues in the very beginning because CrossCode actually did end up in a bundle very early on, and after that that's why we specify that if you put this game on another bundle, please let us know so we can have a word about that. It's also why a lot of people like surprisingly have CrossCode in the Steam library and they never knew about that, because there used to be this bundle back in 2015 where you got a lot of Duke Nukem games and stuff like this, and for some reason there was also CrossCode in there.
Makes sense.
Sure.
Surprisingly, a lot of people got the game this way, and you might argue that this was maybe not the worst move, because that's also how the game spread initially to some extent, but it's still not something I would do again.
All right. So it is time now to get into our rapid fire questions, but before we do so, we want to tell you about...
Wait, hold up, slow down. We got to close out with one final question on CrossCode.
Okay.
How is the post-game DLC coming along, and when can I play it?
It's coming along well. I always say it hopefully this year, but as I said, and as I hinted before, it might end up early next year because we probably need a bit more time to really polish it and get it, because we don't want to rush things, because that's usually what makes the quality worse, and we just want to make sure the quality is good. But early next year should definitely work.
All right.
That is the right answer to that question.
Always. It's always the right answer. No matter what you said, I'll be completely honest with you, Felix. You could have said babble, and I would have said it's the right answer, because it's your thing. It's your DLC. You take your time. You do what you got to do. Speaking of taking our time, you know what else we do? We take our time to do another show here on this very same podcast network called the Dual Screens Games Cast. That's where Andy and I go over the most important news that we decide we want you to listen about, and we talk about it, and then we argue, and then we get into really good conversations about it. And that posts
we
on...
Do.
We do. And that posts on Mondays for your listening pleasure. So right here on the same channel, you can go back one episode and you could see Gamescast, which is a really fun show that we like to do. And we record it live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. So if you want to watch us record it live either on a Sunday or a Monday night, depending on our schedule, you could do that too. And you could give us a follow over there, and we would appreciate it very, 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 very much. We also have Dual Screens Versus, which if you scroll back a little bit further, you'll find, I think it was episode 4 of that show. That's our seasonal content, and we're going to be wrapping up that season in the month of August. We're going to have 2 more episodes, and then we're going to move on to our next seasonal content, Casting Call, where Andy and I are going to go over casting video game movies of our favorite video game franchises with ridiculous casts from around the globe. All right, so let's get into rapid-fire questions, and I'm going to ask you a very simple question. When you were a kid, Felix, and you were made a sandwich, did you have to take the crust off the bread?
No, we always eat the crust in Germany because we also have very different bread.
Okay, very different bread. I like it. Okay. All right. Andy?
Okay. Well, this is our usual first question of this segment. Felix, pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
It's totally fine with me.
Okay. that just sounds like if you see it on it, you'd be like, okay, it's there.
Yeah, I'll eat it.
Right.
Right. All right. You got yourself a delicious plate of hot wings. It's sitting there in front of you. Are you reaching for the blue cheese dressing or the ranch dressing? This could be a very American question. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I did eat chicken wings, so I would say probably the blue cheese dressing, because I didn't eat this before and I like to try new things. That's why.
Mm. Oh, okay, that's good.
Okay, is it okay to sleep with socks on?
I usually don't do that. I think it only happens as an accident.
Correct.
Okay, going with the whole sleep situation, do you wear a pajama outfit, or are you going like just go, you know, boxers or a t-shirt or whatever you're going, and you're just going into bed? Like, do you have like a, like, you know, some people buy like the Old Navy pajama bottoms or something like that. Like, what's
like
style?
A little breast pocket at the top.
Yeah. A little flappy. Yeah. A little collar.
I'm actually wearing a pajama. Yeah. Oh. I do have a lot of pajamas because my mother tends to just give me one for
sure.
Christmas usually every
That's
year.
Such a European thing
I have
to
like
do.
5 or 6 of them, and I even have a summer pajama. And I don't know.
Oh,
like,
you have seasonal pajamas.
Yeah, for winter and one for summer.
Oh, love boy, it! Look at that. Would you rather be a reverse centaur or a reverse merman?
Oh man, now I have to think of what that would look like.
Well, it's gonna be your human body, but with the horse head.
Yeah, or the horse,
or a fish head with
a fish head.
Human
feet.
I'm gonna take a horse head, I think, because at least I can still run on land, I guess.
Yeah,
but with a fish head, I won't.
And you know, you could do a bunch of BoJack Horseman cosplay and just do some appearances to get some money on that on the side.
That could be your whole job. I mean, you could go to the circus.
See,
here's the thing: there's no traveling aquarium,
right?
You know, but there are traveling circuses, so you could make it as a traveling circus performer. With the whole horse head thing.
That's true.
All right. So let's say you're a superhero. Does your costume have a cape?
I probably shouldn't add a cape because it's like too much of a risk. I learned that from a certain movie. Which one was it again? The Pixar one.
Incredibles.
Incredibles. That's the one, yeah.
It is. It's a liability, indeed.
Which is more preferable, being nice or being fair?
That's difficult. Something between. you can't say, but usually I tend to be more fair because like it's sometimes stupid to be fair, but not nice. Mm. There might be situations where you have to be nice.
Mouse and keyboard or controller?
Oh, yeah. Like when I play CrossCode, usually actually mouse and keyboard, ironically, even though I'm more of a gamepad person normally because I'm more of a console player than a PC player.
Which adjective best describes you when you're drunk?
When I'm drunk, probably, I don't know, probably hungry, but I'm also hungry when I'm not drunk. So
okay.
Hunger is not mutually exclusive.
More hungry.
Vocally hungry. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Power of flight sounds nicer. I like to just see things from above. That's always nice.
Would you rather have edible spaghetti hair that regrows every night, or would you rather sweat maple syrup?
What are these questions?
Wow.
I told you I had some doozies.
I'm gonna take the spaghetti because honestly, spaghettis are not as messy. If I sweat maple syrup, I can throw away whatever clothes.
Right, and plus, if you're always hungry, it seems like the logical choice for you.
Indeed.
Yeah, they're both carbs. But
ooh, what if the carbs you eat determine the carbs that you grow out of your head?
Oh boy!
So yeah, it's just a net carb situation. You could just eat whatever you want, carb it up, and just grow your hair. You could solve world hunger.
Keto, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just have strands of pizza crusts coming down the side of my head.
Would you rather have eyes in your hands or ears on the bottom of your feet?
Eyes on my hands because that actually sounds much more useful. But then again, well, you do listen to things when you have ears on the ground, I suppose. But still, eyes on the hand because like eyes are more useful for humans overall.
I feel like you're going to poke your eyes out way more than you would damage your ears if they're on your feet. Like, I'd be so nervous. Like,
and they're always muffled. So, what's the, you know.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Would you rather have one real get out of jail free card or a key that opens any door?
Ooh.
A key that opens any door seems useful to have.
Well, is it a one-time use thing, Andy?
Is no, it like... the key. No, it's a key that opens any door.
Oh, every door, not any door. Every right. door.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Every door. Every and any door.
Every and any door. Wow, that's really
cool. Right. Your neighbor's door. You know, the bank's door.
Yeah. The bank's inner door. Too,
if you want to use it that way. So.
I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. Mm-hmm. Let me think. Would you rather be able to run forever without having to stop, or hold your breath forever without having to stop?
Run forever, I think, is very nice. Breathing, not breathing, well.
I have a follow-up question to that. And that follow-up question is, all right, follow-up Felix. Question. Felix, what are you running from?
Oh, man. Yeah, but it's just good to be able to run for long, I guess.
Especially when you got spaghetti hair.
Yeah.
Right.
You have a lot of calories there.
All right. Here we go. Would you rather go back to the age of 5 with everything you know now? Or
sounds horrifying.
Would you rather know now everything your future self will learn?
I think probably go back to the age of 5 with my current knowledge, because then again, that's not time travel, right? So you start at the current time with the age of 5, or how is that? Good point, because I'm not sure I want to start all over at this time being 5 years old.
Right.
Probably don't want that. If I go back in time, then I would do that. But otherwise, I would just take my knowledge from the future.
Right. Mm-hmm. It just takes you right now as age 5.
I mean, think about it. No more magic on Christmas Day. You know, that's gone.
Right. Puberty all over again. Who want that, you know?
Yeah.
That's true. But I might add less stupid doing school, not just because of classes. Other things, but socially too.
True.
I might act less stupid.
You would probably, like, not you specifically, but like any person would probably be the most obnoxious human on earth if they had that knowledge. You're like, nope, that's bullshit. I know that's bullshit.
Yeah, because what's stopping from being a total asshole?
Right. Like, wrong.
Actually, here's how it really works.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Felix, if you could make a video game with using one IP, any IP, which IP would that be?
I think Secret of Mana would be nice.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Because I would really like to create a very nice Secret of Mana game, because we didn't have a very good new Secret of Mana game in a long time. But then again, I think Square Enix might maybe start working on some more, since the remakes have been overall well-received enough, I think. So, and I'm actually looking forward to that if they manage to create something good.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Secret of Mana is a nice... And I mean, that's essentially one of the games we grew up with. So most of our team.
All right, Andy. You got one more question, and then I'll ask the final question.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Okay. This is always a fun one. What is the dumbest way you've ever been injured?
The dumbest way I've ever been injured. Oh gosh, I'm not sure if I can remember, but I essentially recently we just bought a very nice sharp knife, and essentially just cut myself just as I opened it.
You're the reason why.
Quick to realize it was very sharp indeed.
Yep.
You are the reason why on a package of a knife it says contains sharp objects. You are the person.
This is why child safety things exist.
Yeah.
All right. Now the final question and the most difficult question, not only of this show, but of your entire life. And that is, and I could tell you that right off the bat, there's no person that has been asked this question, and we ask everyone on the show, no person that has ever been asked this question has ever said it was an easy question. It's always been the most difficult question they've ever been asked. So I hope you're prepared, because it's a tough one. Okay. And it's a very simple one.
It's true.
Andy or Steve?
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. What was Andy or Steve? I know. I've been looking at Andy for most of the time just because he's like the angle is more pleasant. So I'm going to say Andy for that reason.
Okay. All right. Listen, that's my sky cam.
I'll take it.
That's my sky cam for when I'm doing workouts because on Twitch they'll give me like push-ups to do. So I switch to that camera, but I get it. I understand completely. And folks, that is the Dual Screens podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support us again on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/NDS podcast. Thank you to our producers, Colton the Apprentice Nestler, and of course, FNH Paul. Remember, you could support us for as little as $1 and you get a bonus episode, and you could ask or you could vote on the topic of that episode as well. Andy and I are actually going to record the bonus episode right after this. So stay tuned for that. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. And our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS Podcasts. Felix, where can everybody find everything about you, about CrossCode, Radical Fish? Give everybody everything.
Well, there's our webpage, www.radicalfishgames.com. You'll find most things from there. We do have a Discord server, too. So just look for CrossCode on Discord. That's actually the best way to reach us because we are usually on Discord most of the time. Mm-hmm. There's an email that you can write us. We are on Twitter too. We're also on Facebook, but you don't look at Facebook that much. So Discord and Twitter is the best way to reach us pretty much. Awesome. And email.
Awesome. Special thanks to Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio for our theme song, Retro Chatter. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for our cartoon art. And thank you, Matt Murray, for our overlays and our logos. If you want to purchase any merchandise, go to dualscreens.com/store. And that's pretty much it. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go? Do you want to tell our listeners anything special?
I mean, I could announce our next guest, but we have like four of them lined up. Oh, and boy. They're in a war now to see who can get in next. So,
oh, boy.
Announcement soon, but it's okay. Exciting times to be alive.
That's awesome.
As a host of this podcast.
That's awesome. That's going to do it for us, folks. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Felix. It was a pleasure and good luck with everything.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Listeners, thank you. And as always, please be excellent to each other.